Okay, have I started this? Yeah, it's time to get started. So if you remember, we looked at three solutions to the readers and writers problem, the last one being correct. I'll give you an alternate version, but we'll go with this one now. One had, the first two had starvation. Those were relatively simpler, although I kept griping about the block inside the critical section, which is never a good idea. If you write a semaphore program, don't do any blocking inside critical sections. So that's kind of a bad example in the first two pieces of code. The third one was done relatively cleaner. I feel it's much more easier to understand, but it is not simple in its behavior. There's a lot going on there in terms of which reader is getting blocked where and how is it getting woken up and etc. And I did say something about there's a little bit of code there which looks unnecessary. Did anybody look into that and see why it may be necessary, or is it really unnecessary? Okay, that'll be a good midterm question. Or maybe I should tell you. Anyway, so there were four pieces of code: reader entry, reader exit, writer entry, writer exit. I think I managed to put all four here. Yeah. So can somebody just go over this and see, tell me how it works? What does it do? Or try to find fault with it? This is a reasonably complex semaphore program. Although it uses only 1, 2, 3 semaphores and not too many lines of code. So as we discussed last time, a reader process or thread will do this. After this piece of code, it can be in the read zone. You're guaranteed there'll be no writers in the read zone. There may be more than one reader, and then it'll exit and it'll go to the remainder section, so it's no longer in the read zone. The writer will use this piece of code to enter, and then it'll be in the write zone, in which case it's guaranteed that there would be no readers executing between the entry and the exit, and no writers executing between the entry and the exit. And then it'll exit, free up the thing. Now, although it's written as two different things, there are multiple processes simultaneously running this code. There are multiple processes simultaneously, threads if you prefer, running this code. And we've labeled those guys as reader processes, these guys as writer processes. Now, which part of this makes sense or does not make sense? I'm trying to get a feel for what should I talk about, because, okay, I can just say, okay, rest is simple, it works. Anybody have questions? We can try doing some examples if you prefer. I drew this to signify one writer somehow has executed all this and is here. If so, what can we say about the values of the various variables? Some we can say something, some we cannot. What will be the value of WC?
One.
What will be the value of RC? Zero. How are you sure? Yeah, that's correct, but how are you sure? That's what the program is supposed to make sure there's no reader. How do we know those claims are true? So if a writer has gone here, how did it get here? Pardon? It must have passed that if condition. That means over there, read count cannot be greater than zero or write count cannot be greater than zero. That means both had to be zero. If something was not zero, it would have been stuck over there. Or maybe it was stuck over there, and then it fell through. How do we know when it fell through, it didn't go back and check the if condition? So that suddenly there are two options here. It came through the if condition, which was false, hence we know RC is still zero, and WC was zero, now it's one because we incremented it, and that's cool. What if it came from here?
It wouldn't pass the P until the reader exits there. The if would have to be true between R2 and D0.
Okay, the reader and exit does not check for WC.
No, but it will change WC on the if statement. It'll release it. The RC is zero and there's something waiting for writer, then it will release
one writer. Right. But how do you know WC is zero?
Because for there to be a waiter, it would have to have been zero there.
Yeah, then the writers are there, but I did not check whether WC is indeed zero. It is zero, but how do we know? The hint is that if a reader is exiting, unless if something is wrong, WC had to be zero. You can't have a writer. But is it really? So if a reader is somewhere here, it had to pass the test that WC is equal to zero to come here. But it could have dropped out. So it's not as easy as it looks. It looks like I'm not checking enough. But I'm sure if I added a validation that at this point, you know, there's a assert statement, assert WC is zero, assert something, those asserts will pass. WC will be zero. It's hard to see why. So let's try backing up. Let's try backing up that this writer came straight in, did not go that way. So RC and WC were zero, and now WC is one. Okay. What can we say about RWC and WWC? Will it all be zero?
No.
Not necessarily. So let's pick a number. Both are two. How did it become two? So if I find that there is, I have some kind of a microscope that shows me where the things are, the threads are, and if I see that this thread is over here, and RWC and WWC are both two, then where are the other threads?
So
R7 and WSEM, right. So at this point, RWC, WWC is equal to 2. So that means there is a two writers here and two readers here. Because RC is only RWC is only incremented if some thread comes around this way, and WWC is only incremented if some thread comes around that way. And if I can see that, then they have crossed the mutex part and they're here. Now RWC could be one if the reader is still in the process of updating something, but if the mutexes are done, then that reader will be here. Okay. Now, when this W exits, what happens? Point to the code, tell me. The end result is it allows readers. Okay. Now, how does that work? Reader waiting count is greater than zero. It first grabs the critical section because none of these variables should be looked at or updated if you're not in a critical section. Okay, so it grabs the critical section. It decrements WC. Now we know for sure WC is zero. Checks for RWC, it's two. Then what happens here? It runs the for loop to how many times?
Twice.
So it does two VRSEMs, bumping the RSEM up two counts. The net result of that is that it will signal this guy and two readers will get freed. Okay? And then it does not do VWSEM because that's in the else part. And it goes away. Yeah.
So when it bumps the VRSM, so the readers are still up there and they don't grab the critical section yet, so they're still after the PRSM, but before the PRTEX because it hasn't released the critical section.
Yes. So it hasn't grabbed the critical section. Now we are going down a rat hole. It hasn't grabbed the critical section, but it has dropped out of RSM. When will they grab it? We don't know. That's up to the scheduler. Okay. So right now, if I look at it, RWC is still 2, WC is 0, RC is 0. Okay? Now, two things can happen here. Before it grabs the mutex, a new one comes in and grabs the mutex before. And it finds WWC is greater than 0. What if there were no WC? Okay, so it'll go and increment RWC again. But if WWC was not 0, it'll enter. Which is okay. But on the flip side here, what if at this point it has signaled two readers? Okay? A writer comes along and grabs the critical section before the woken up readers can grab the mutex critical section. RC is 0, WC is 0. Can it enter?
Yes,
because... because I said we will get rid of these guys. So a new writer can just enter. Would it be okay?
No.
Because everything's 0, so the writer enters.
But the readers are primed to enter.
The readers are primed to enter. So will they enter too?
Theoretically they could, right?
Yeah, they will. So you'll have two readers and one writer. But that's not allowed. That's the fix. That if a new writer comes and finds RC is 0 and WC is 0, it doesn't mean it's okay to enter. It might mean some readers have not updated the RC yet. They have been woken up. So it should check if there are readers waiting or writers waiting. And continuing, so if this writer goes out, it lets two readers in, all this funny business doesn't happen. These two readers, the first reader will go out after some time. That reader will grab the critical section, decrement RC. RC is not 0, it's 1 because it was bumped to 2. It'll just go out and open the critical section. The last reader out will find, after decrementing, will find RC is equal to 0. It'll do a VWSEM if WWC is greater than 0, which it is, because there. If WWC was not greater than 0, and you did a VWSEM, that would be wrong, because it would mean next time a writer which should be blocked comes, the semaphore is already pre-bumped up, it'll not get blocked. So this is very important that you've done this only if there's waiting writers. So that's why I'm trying to spend some time over this. This is subtle. If you don't understand any part, let me know now. I'll go over it. Yeah?
Can you explain why you need the WWC greater than 0 again?
Why WWC is greater than 0? So let's say Let's say there are no writers active. Okay, a bunch of readers got in. So RC will be some value. And then all the readers exited. Exited in some order, of course, because the ordering is maintained by the mutex. They can only exit one at a time. So they keep on decreasing RC. The last one to exit will find RC is greater than zero. RC is equal to zero. And if it doesn't check this, does a VWSEM, the value of WSEM will change to 1. Okay? After that, another reader comes in and goes in. There are no writers. The reader is in here. Now a writer comes. Writer finds there's a reader in here. RC is greater than 0. So it comes this way to get blocked. It'll not block. It'll decrement WSEM and go in also. So the number of times you do VWSEM, that many writers can go past. So if you do it ahead of time, a writer will go in. So don't do it until you know there's a writer waiting there. Because the semaphores are counting, so they remember what you did. Do you remember what these semaphores were initialized to? Which one is 1? Mutex is 1, yes. RSEM is 0. And? WSEM is also 0. So nobody gets past RSEM or WSEM. Mutex, one process can go in. Any questions? What other situation can we face? We did talk about what if there are readers in the room. And of course, that simple case is when there are readers inside, between here, and let me use a different color here. Let's say there are two readers here. Obviously, there's no writer. And a writer comes and, of course, we'll find reader count is greater than 0. So there'll be a writer here. Now, the third reader tries to enter. Then what happens? It gets stuck because writer waiting count is greater than 0, so the third reader will get stuck, even though it's okay technically to come in because more than 3 readers are allowed. But that's the unfairness to make sure things don't starve. And then it comes and gets stuck. When will this reader, which the third reader which got stuck, be able to go in? After that writer goes in, comes out, then this reader will go in. Yeah?
So that reader is going to be waiting until the writer goes in.
Yes.
But that writer has to wait until the two readers are
also. Yes. So two readers are holding it up and nobody else can come in, neither readers nor writers. So I'm wondering whether I should move on or still play with this. So semaphore programming is a skill. Developing this takes time. So yes, you've got to stare at these things or come up with a problem and solve it or look at the textbook. There's a bunch of semaphore problems in there. Cigarette smoker's problem, sleeping barber's problem, which I'm not going to cover. It's in the exercises. Try and write those programs. Okay, my next step would be, even though that thing is necessary, the last two conditions over there, because there's a little problem, so that is kind of a patch. That's a patch to prevent, there's this hole where woken up things, before they can grab the mutex, some new threads can grab the mutex first. So it's kind of a timing problem. That was fixed by doing that. I don't like it. I want to get rid of those and the hole. How would I do it? Maybe that's a difficult question to answer. I really want to get rid of that statement which I had originally crossed out. And what I want is that If a writer signals a bunch of readers, they should go in before any new readers go in or any new writers go in.
Could you do different semaphores, like a mutex 1 and a mutex 2?
No, because the same variables are checked in two places. They have to be protected by the same critical section. So I cannot do with two mutexes. In fact, it will give you more concurrency and more trouble. Okay, I'll give you the answer. The answer is, let me see, here I wake up a writer and I unlock the critical section. Now the writer might grab the critical section, a new writer might grab the critical section, or a new reader might grab the critical section. But I expressly want this writer to go next, nobody else. So here's my trick. When I wake up somebody, I don't unlock the critical section. I pretend I'm going to pass this person my critical section so that no new people can grab the critical section. I will say, I'm actually leaving the critical section, but I'm passing the critical section to the process I woke up. It's a mind game. But it's that person's responsibility. So I cannot put the V here, and I cannot put the P here. Then that person will acquire the critical section logically and then unlock it here, allowing fresh people to come in. Okay? Hand over. So yes, I'm going to delete that P mutex and delete this V mutex in certain cases. And that'll be a minor change, but on this side it'll be a major change. I'll show you how that code looks like. Okay, I should probably put the writer thing here, but it is a lot of doing. I don't know if I can do this. Okay, the caption got lost, but at least the whole thing is visible. No, it came back. No, but this part's... Yeah, I think everything's visible now. This thing looks pretty much the same as the previous one, but it's not. It works quite a bit different. Where should I start? No, let's go with the reader exit and writer entry. So we have a few writers stuck here. We have readers coming out one by one. The last reader out notices there is one or more writers waiting, does a VWSEM. So that signals one of the writers. And it does not do a V on mutex. So the critical section is still locked. Now, who does this critical section belong to? Who locked it? The last reader out locked it. So it belongs to the last reader out. But the last reader is not going to use it anymore. If it needs it, it's going to reacquire it. So it kind of donates the critical section to one process, which is the writer it woke up. The writer does not need to reacquire it. As a result, no other people can sneak into the critical section. Only this writer can. And it goes, increments WC, and unlocks the critical section here. Okay? Similarly, when the writer exits, it's supposed to, it sees reader count is greater than zero, it's supposed to wake up all the readers. But it has the critical section, can it give it to all the readers? It can give it to only one reader. One thread at a time goes into the critical section. So it does not unlock the critical section. But I had to take out the for loop, because I can only give it to one reader, so I can only wake up one reader. I do a... Oh, here. Oh, I'm over here. RWC is greater than 0, then VRSEP. I should have done a for loop. In the previous case, it was a for loop, but now it's just a singleton. So there are three readers waiting. I woke up one. Who's going to wake up the other two? It's over there. So I pass it to one reader. So I know that for sure that reader is going to drop out. Nobody else has the critical section. So it's going to now execute in the critical section. It'll increment RC. And it'll find RWC is still greater than 0. It has decremented it. So it's going to wake up one more reader. And it's not going to unlock the critical section. That reader is going to wake up one more reader, not unlock the critical section. The last reader woken up will unlock the critical section because there's an else clause here. Yeah.
Can the writer that goes that gets the critical section give its critical section to another writer?
Yes, that's what's happening here. So if there are no readers waiting, it checks for a waiting writer. If there is, it gives the critical section to that waiting writer. If there is nobody waiting, it opens the critical section. Yeah. No, because that V mutex was not done. So this V mutex will increment it to 1. Okay? So this is a different way of doing it. You know, in programming you can choose many. So it's algorithm's different. I'm passing the token, I'm passing the critical section. That way there is no sneaking in when I don't want you to sneak in. I have much better control. And as a result, I don't need those two conditions up there. If a new process comes in and finds RC is 0, WC is 0, it knows that any waiting things that have been woken up has already entered. I'm safe to go. If those two numbers are 0, I'm good. That part may be a little bit difficult to see. Anybody have a question? Yeah.
Could you have a race condition on RC?
You cannot have a race condition on RC, but correct me if I'm wrong, because there is no two threads ever touching RC at the same time. When do you think such a situation could happen? One reader is exiting, one reader is entering. And there is this RC here, and there is this RC here. One reader is doing this, one reader is doing that. Okay. It cannot happen because both of these are inside critical sections. Except this one looks like if you come in this way, it's not in a critical section. But it's in that inherited critical section. So if I'm here, I'm guaranteed nobody is here. Or if I'm here, I'm guaranteed nobody is here. That's true for the WC also. So all of this code will execute one at a time, the entry code and the exit code. The pmutex at the top, and in the previous case there was pmutex after waking up, now there is not, but that we can talk about. Pmutex at the top, vmutex in most cases at the bottom, sometimes there isn't. So if there is no vmutex, that means critical section is locked, nobody else can get in anyway. So anytime you're in here, you have locked it, except when you unlock over here. So over here, when you do a vmutex, you may not have blocked yet, but you're not going to be doing anything other than go to the semaphore. So even if it takes you time to get to the semaphore operation, other people can go in one by one. And you've made all your decisions, you're just going to go stop at the semaphore. Yeah.
If there's a cascade of readers going in, what's stopping them from more readers coming in if there's a writer waiting?
Okay. Good question. How will you show that this cascade will terminate if there is a writer? Yeah.
Is it because when all of them exit and then it would exit through vmutex, or it would exit the entry part through vmutex?
Yes, it will exit the entry part through vmutex.
And then another reader would need to go through if there's a waiting writer, and then there will be.
Right. Yeah. Let me rephrase that. If I start this cascade, nobody, neither a reader or writer, will be able to access the critical section. So at that point, no new readers can come in because the critical section is locked. New people can come in only when the last reader of the cascade, there's finite number of readers there, only when the last reader opens the gate. When it opens the gate, a new one comes in, if it's a reader, and if there's a writer waiting, it will figure it out and get blocked. Reader waiting count is, writer waiting count will be greater than zero. But if the cascade ends and there is a reader, new reader comes in, there are no writers, the new reader will also enter. But the cascade is started by this guy, and at this point, there are a certain number of readers. This one will pass it to one of them, that one will pass it to the next one, and nothing new is coming in anymore. It is a fascinating piece of code. Is the most confusion you can create with the smallest number of lines. Because it's not a sequential program. Each thread is sequential, but there are so many threads at various positions in time that it gets a little difficult to perceive what's going on. But what does it use? It uses mutual exclusion semaphores initialized to 1 and synchronization semaphores initialized to 0. That's all. And it enforces this rule of things queuing up, you go first, you go next, so many can go through, not anymore, next one has to be looked at eventually. All those rules are created through 3 semaphores. going over the cascade once again. Bunch of readers waiting. Where are they waiting? On our cell. Okay? There are some new people trying to come in. Well, at the moment, nothing new can come in because this writer is exiting and it has grabbed the mutex. When it grabs the mutex, everything freezes. I'm in charge. No new people can come in, no movement can happen. Nobody else can exit either. If the reader tries to exit, but of course the writer exiting means there's nobody else exiting. It decrements WC, checks RWC, it's greater than zero, so it wakes up one reader and quits. Critical section still locked, nobody can come in. So that one reader will wake up, I don't know when, but until it wakes up, nothing's going to happen. That one reader will wake up and it's plopped into the critical section. Critical section is still locked. It does its thing of updating the variables, finds that there are more readers waiting. It has decremented RWC, but they're still not zero. It wakes up one more reader and quits, doesn't do a vmutex. So that next reader inherits the critical section, no new people coming in. That new reader enters, wakes up the third reader. The third reader finds that RWC is now zero. So it doesn't do any more wake up. It opens the critical section. Moment it opens the critical section, new people can come in one by one. But by now, reader count is a certain number, so writers won't come in. New readers can come in only if the writer waiting count is zero, not otherwise. And that's the cascade effect. However, if when a writer exits, there are no readers, it'll go, well, let me check a writer. If there is a writer, if there's no writer, it'll open the critical section. If there is a writer, it does a V on W cell and hands over the critical section. So now this writer is chosen to enter. Nothing new will happen. This writer will enter, open up the critical section, and let other people fight for their entry rights. So a whole bunch of rules are being enforced here, but there is no manager. There's nobody overseeing, okay, you can go in now, you can go in now. It's a self-enforcing protocol. That is, the readers and writers themselves figure out whose turn is it. When should I go in? How long should I wait? All this is being done kind of amongst the threads themselves. Yeah. It is better or worse is a matter of taste. Okay? Because they do exactly the same thing in net effect. Their behavior is slightly different. Both are correct. Both are going to have no starvation and will have this reader preference, writer preference thing. So now which one is better? I'll pass my opinion. I like this one better. But you could have a different opinion. It doesn't matter. It's just not arguable that this is better. Scheduler doesn't know anything. No, scheduler just schedules. So you're talking about in terms of performance, which is better. No difference. Okay? What happened here? Oh, I just slept, got to sleep. Oh? really went to sleep. Okay. So what's the decree? You want to talk about this or see more semaphore programs? Next one is Dining Philosophers, which is one of the most famous problems because it sounds cool. Anybody have questions? Okay, I have no idea who came up with the story of the dining philosophers, but it's only used in operating systems classes, and other fields of study have dining philosopher envy because they don't have such a problem. The only one I know of is in cryptography. There's a dining cryptographer's problem, but it's very contrived. It's not as naturally fitting as the dining philosophers to operating systems. What is the dining philosopher's problem? So there are some philosophers. And these philosophers are in a loop, and all they do is eat and think. Okay? So they spend some time eating and they spend some time thinking. So if I have... Traditionally, for whatever reason, we will have five philosophers. And we could say they're independent. Any philosopher can eat anytime he or she wants to or think he or she wants to. But we put some constraints on this eating and thinking. So we say thinking, you go do independently. Eating, we're going to have a little bit of a problem. So they're seated around a round table. Here are the five philosophers. We'll call them 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they have plates in front of them. This is getting silly. But the waiter has put chopsticks like this. So there are only five chopsticks, and a philosopher needs two chopsticks to eat. Okay? So that means two neighbors cannot eat at the same time. So what happens if a philosopher is done thinking and wants to eat? Philosopher has to get both chopsticks. They have to be available. If one of the chopsticks or both are not available, the philosopher has to sleep a little. And then, when both chopsticks are available, he or she can grab them, eat, and put them down. So what's the problem? The problem is write a philosopher program which checks for chopsticks, sleeps when appropriate, wakes up when needed, eats, and then goes away and thinks, which doesn't need any cooperation from anybody. So it's back to this process coordination problem, but in a very different sort. It's not like you're counting readers and writers. You have a more structured approach that when this guy is eating, these two cannot eat, but that guy can eat. Right? So I've got to write a philosopher program very symmetrically, and I'll talk about the asymmetry business. So philosopher I wants to eat, it needs to get chopstick 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I have chopstick numbers and I have philosopher numbers. If philosopher I wants to eat, which chopstick numbers it needs? I and? I and I plus 1, except I have to do a, because the fifth one needs 4 and 0. Number 4 needs 4 and 0. And so now we're going to put chopsticks I plus 1, 5 back. So that's my program. So the challenge is, how do I write this function using semaphores? Get and put. Do we need critical sections? Do we need semaphores? How many do we need? I'll give you a very simple solution to the dining philosopher's problem. Get will become so we have 5 semaphores in it, 2, 1. So I go like, hey, I can use semaphores. Why don't I model the chopsticks as semaphores? So if I take it, I decrement it. If I put it back, I increment it atomically. I don't need critical sections. I'm just using semaphores, which have built-in synchronization magic. And if the chopstick's missing, then the semaphore value is 0, and I'll get stuck until the chopstick is available. Somebody has done a V operation. There, I'm done. But life ain't so easy. Anybody have a problem with this solution? Yeah.
Every philosopher could grab one chopstick.
Yes. And they will all... Every philosopher wakes up at the same time, stops thinking at the same time, grabs one chopstick. They always grab the right chopstick first. And the second chopstick's not available, so they all wait for the second chopstick to be available. When will it be available? Never. Never as in never ever, so that's kind of starvation, except it's not called starvation. Remember, what is starvation in operating systems term? That is, you don't get service, but you might. It might resolve itself, or it might not. It's kind of chancy. This one will never resolve itself. And it's called a deadlock. So we have programmed a correct solution to the Dunning philosopher's problem, but it has a chance, and a very high chance, of getting into a deadlock, which will kill all the philosophers.
Well, one one dies when they get the chopstick.
Oh, they won't be returning them. It's hard to return a chopstick when you're dead. Okay, so sadly the book leaves it at this. Here's the solution. No, this is not a solution. What can we do better? Yeah. Time out, something, yeah, but we don't want to. We are very prim and proper, we'll only use semaphores. There's an easy solution which says reverse the order of pickup in one philosopher. If philosopher, if I is 5, do, I is 4, do the reverse. Now, it doesn't have to be philosopher 4, it could be philosopher 3, 0, 1, whichever. It actually breaks the deadlock because one of them will not get the chopstick and there'll be one empty, so the neighbor will get it and it'll resolve. This is not considered a good solution because it's asymmetric. So we want to make our lives a little more miserable and try to come up with a symmetric solution. And it's tough. Okay? And it's rooted in deadlock theory, which we haven't done, but we will eventually.
Can you remind me what you mean by symmetric?
They all do exactly the same thing. Okay, the code is not changed because of a certain thing. Mm-hmm.
Would it work if we make it to where only the even number of diners or the even number of diners can pick up the other one?
Yeah, but it's still asymmetric. Some people do it this way, some people do it that way. See, all these readers and writers produce a consumer, it was the exact same code for everybody. Here I want the exact same code. I know if you put I is 4, it's the exact same code, but its behavior is not. This is along the lines, it's not a critical section, but it's along the lines of the critical section. You took one chopstick, the other one's not there, so you hold on to this, not use it, and you're waiting for this one to appear. Don't do that. If you can't use it, put it back. Maybe the other person can use it. So take the chopsticks when they're both available. Not sure if it works, but let's try and code it. But if both are not available, then what do you do? Okay, you go to sleep. Fine. So I will have okay? Yeah, I just have enough time to finish this. This is my pickup routine. Notice I'm using a while statement, not an if. Because, you'll see why. I say that both the chopsticks have to be available. This has to be one and that has to be one. Negate that condition and you go, this is not one or that is not one. So I go to sleep if either my right chopstick is not available or... Now, I plus 1 should all be modulo 5. I'm just using a shortcut here. Okay? Just make sure that when you write down this is a mod 5, this is mod 5. If my right chopstick and the left chopstick, if one of them is not available, I just open up the critical section, I go to sleep. And then somehow magically I wake up. Somebody has to wake me up. Somehow magically I wake up, I grab the critical section, and I will have to test it again. I'm not sure if both of them have appeared, because whoever woke me up may not have done a good job of checking for me. So I'm going to test it again and go to sleep again, or I'll find, aha, it's there. And I'm in a critical section. So nobody else is coming in and messing with chopsticks. I'm going to set the chopsticks to unavailable and get up. Go eat. And of course, I'll need a put-down routine. Maybe I can write it here. I need a vmutex. This is a little funky, but anyway. I put down my left and right chopsticks. This is I and this is I plus 1 mod 5. Then I wake up my neighbors. This left and right, none of them is I. One is I minus 1, one is I plus 1. And there is no I minus 1 mod 5 because I'm 0. So you have to write it as I plus 4 mod 5. Okay? But ignoring that. So whoever is eating, when they stop eating, they put their chopsticks down and wake up the neighbors, saying, hey, I put down chopsticks, maybe you can eat. I did not go and check whether the neighbors have the other chopstick. I just wake them up, let them check. Are we done? Yeah.
The philosopher wants to eat again.
After he eats, he comes back again and he wants to eat again. Yeah, this is all loop. So he's put down the chopsticks. If he's the only philosopher and he comes and eats again, that's fine. Yes, this is assumed that it's an infinite loop. So I just wrote the pick up and the put down. So it's pick up, eat, put down, think, go back. We're missing eating and thinking. I just didn't write it down, then I'll need more space. So between the pick up and the put down, there's eat. After the put down, there's think. After the think, it's go back to pick up. Does this work? Yes, how? Show me.
Like, you don't know when the next philosopher is hungry?
No, the philosopher is hungry when he's in this loop. So he's waiting. That's when the philosopher is hungry. But will this hunger ever get satisfied? It gets satisfied when he finds both chopsticks are there. Then he can eat. Okay, here's the easy answer. This fella is eating. I can't eat. I go to sleep. This fella starts eating. Okay. Then this fella stops eating, wakes me up. I find he's eating. I go to sleep. Since I'm sleeping, this fella starts eating. And then this fellow quits and wakes me up. I'm still out of a chopstick. So they alternately and overlappingly eating. And I don't get to eat. And that is called starvation in operating systems terms. And it is starvation in this case. But it can resolve itself. It might happen that they both stop eating and I can get to eat. Okay? Okay.